Coucou tout le monde, you're listening to Le Bookworms Pod. I'm Helen.
And I'm Miranda. This is the podcast that explores the diversity of the francophonie.
One book at a time.
Au fond de son âme, cependant, elle attendait un événement. Comme les Matteo en détresse, elle promenait sur la solitude de sa vie des yeux désespérés, cherchant au loin quelques voiles blanches dans les brumes de l'horizon. Elle ne savait pas quel serait ce hasard, le vent qui le pousserait jusqu'à elle, vers que rivage il la mènerait.
Hey Miranda, how are you?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm feeling pretty good. I am excited about this week's episode. It's a bit different. We're going back in time. Well, to be fair, Proust is pretty far back in time as well.
Yeah, we're going contemporary with Proust and maybe even a little earlier.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. So anyways, this week is actually going to be talking about some French classics that we have read, because during our conversation on the first volume of Proust last week, he actually name drops quite a few of these classics because they're classics for Proust. So in the spirit of timelessness and how things sometimes don't change, mm-hmm. we thought, why not give our modern perspectives on whether or not these books are worth your time or if we liked them, or I don't know, we'll see. I think it's important to always ask, are these books that should be continued to pass down? That's because of you and
yes.
what we did with our other English book club, which was Read Jane Eyre. We'll let you like kind of give a little minute preface of why I'm talking about what books should be passed on, because I think it's such an important question and way to focus our discussion on classics.
Yeah, so this is becoming just like a fan podcast for Vanessa Zoltan and everything she's ever done. But if you don't know Vanessa Zoltan and you like even one iota of us, you will love her.
Yes.
She has a podcast called On Air, but it's also through Hot and Bothered, her production company. And she is fantastic. Essentially, she has a stepdaughter who is coming to the age of 14. And when Vanessa was 14, her mother gave her a copy of Jane Eyre and it became her favorite book. And she's asking the question, does Jane Eyre still deserve to be passed down to my 14-year-old stepdaughter? I think that in exploring that question, we really go into all of the difficult parts about mm-hmm. classics, which is that they are by just inherently dated, and dated in a societal, sometimes really crappy way, you know, sometimes yeah. really painful and gross way. As we experienced with Le Tour de la France par les deux enfants, mm-hmm. like it was a great book and the most racist things I've ever read.
Yeah,
and
it was pretty
so
bad.
That was sort of, it was sort of, and she sort of looks through the eyes of what is this trying to tell us to do? What is this calling us to do? What are the themes? What is this telling? What is this sort of educating women or readers to do? I think it's a really great way of looking at classics. And
it's changed my perspective 100%. Like I have to read it almost that way now, because it's a question that is really important, I think, because you can love something, or even when you're revisiting texts, like for instance, I love Oscar Wilde. And so I've read his books many yeah. times. And it's one of those things where I'm like, wow, okay, which books would I say, yeah, let's pass it down. Which books I'm like, maybe not this one. Like, it's one of those things where
yeah.
it helps me recenter my focus on objectively if the book is good. But like you said, it can be a good book, but maybe it's not something we want to continue the story.
Yeah, exactly. And I think these books that we're about to talk about are like really exciting for that reason. There's so much there. Mm-hmm. And I know the one that I've brought is like known as one of the best books ever written. Which, like, how do you climb down from that and then say, yeah, but it's also kind of problematic? Do we pass this down? So anyway, before we get into that, why don't we talk about what we're drinking today?
I am drinking a refreshing Heineken. Just keeping it nice and simple today. Nothing crazy. But it gets the job done.
That sounds lovely. Oh, yes, it does. That sounds delightful. I'm having a little port, actually. We had some friends visit us recently, and they gifted us a bottle of port, and I've never been a huge fan, but man, it's pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, in like small quantities, otherwise it makes your stomach hurt, but it's quite yummy. Yeah.
Fine. Well, let's dive right in, because there's so much to cover. So this episode is going to be slightly different. Like Miranda hinted at, we each brought a few classics to the table. So we're going to be covering three different texts. So we're going to talk about The Country Waif by George Sand, or in French, it's known as François de Champy. I think the French title is so much better, even though it probably translates to the same thing. I just find The Country Waif to be quite odd.
Weird.
So I'm also going to be talking about Le Père Goriot by Honoré Balzac, which is quite a famous one. And what about you, Miranda? What are you going to treat us to today?
I am going to be talking about Gustave Flaubert's Madame Bovary, which is also a very classic one. I think people know the name even if they know nothing about it, which is exactly my experience with Balzac. Like, I know he's so famous, but I don't know anything about the stories, so I'm really
well
excited.
I'm glad that we're doing this, because I have not read Madame Bovary and I have never read Flaubert, so we're in the same boat, just with opposite classics. Okay,
perfect. Well, do you want to get us started?
Yeah, so real quick, I will preface why I decided to read George Sand. It's mentioned in Proust in the very first chapter in Combray, so it's when Marcel is a young boy and it's his awakening to literature and reading, and he actually references this exact book. I had read this previously. If you follow us on Instagram, you'll see that I posted about it quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. But it was a very quick read. I found it on my in-law's bookshelf and I was like, oh, I'll just give it a go. This is a pretty famous author and I haven't read her yet. So for those who are confused, George Sand is actually the pseudonym for Amantine Lucile Aurore d'Aupine. So it's a woman.
Oh my goodness. Did not know.
And she's quite an interesting character. So it was great to get to read one of her works. I read this in French, which is why I am biased towards François de Champy as the title, because that's how I originally came across it.
Of course.
Yeah. So basically, the brief summary is that it's about a 180-page novel, so it's a very short read, and it was published in 1848. It gives a look into provincial life at the end of the July monarchy. So a little history tangent, because you know that's what we do on this podcast. The July monarchy was a liberal constitutional monarchy in France under Louis-Philippe I, which started in 1830 and ended in 1848. The end of this July monarchy was also the end of the Bourbon Restoration, for those who are French royal history buffs. Had to look that up, because I've heard of the Bourbon Restoration, but I did not know the dates.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. So basically, this book focuses on the life of François, who's an orphan boy, and how he navigates society that rejects him. His role in society changes as he grows older, and he's helped a lot by the miller's wife, Madeleine. At the heart of the book, it's about love and relationships, notably between François and Madeleine. That's the spoiler-free summary.
Well, what did you, like, what did you think of it the first time you read it? Because I mean, that's the first thing sort of my old English teacher used to tell us. It's like, okay, we read it. Did you like it?
Yeah. So my take is not really. It was not for me. So there was nothing wrong with it per se, but the ending was a bit odd for me. So without spoiling it too much, but we've also decided these are classics, so we might spoil something. Sorry in advance.
Yeah. It's been out for almost 200 years. Like, let's just, you guys can read it when you want to.
So basically what happens is that Madeleine is this mother figure to François, and the mother figure turns into a lover at the end, and they kind of get together. And I can't say that I enjoyed the mother to lover narrative. It was kind of disgusting. That's to fair. Be honest. It wasn't for me, and I think it dated the novel a bit. And it also might reflect who George Sand was and her own positions on love, because she had many affairs throughout her life, and she also had several with much younger men. So it might have been her writing about her own experiences a bit. So anyways, that's my take. If you're into that, nice. Go for it. It really isn't hard to read. It's pretty accessible language-wise, and it's a short read. So for a classic, go for it if you want. But yeah, just, it was a weird twist there at the end.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll go into mine, because it actually flows pretty well, because I find that Proust doesn't have mothers to lovers necessarily, but so far what we've seen, he's like, Marcel loves his mom.
Yeah.
That's like basically the first thing we read in Proust, is that he wants to be with his mom and he's jealous that she's hanging out with someone cool downstairs, and he's not going to stop until she comes and sleeps in his bed. So, I mean, not the same thing, but like definitely something there with like a mom to son relationship. Anyway, so I brought to the table Madame Bovary, but the way I got into Madame Bovary is I actually started reading, my aunt, who is a librarian, gifted me with Flaubert's other book, which is called Sentimental Education.
Oh.
I read that, and it is actually about a man who enters into a romantic relationship with a much older woman, but it's a great book that's a little bit easier to read. It's also like making fun of French society. It was actually the second book that Flaubert wrote, so I read them in the wrong order, but I think it actually helped me get into it.
Oh, okay, cool. That's a that's a interesting way to approach it, of it doesn't matter, because sometimes when you read the second, it's hard to go back to the first, because like someone's found their writing style, or it's just like a better quality.
Yes.
So cool that it worked in the opposite way for you.
Yeah, so Sentimental Education is, like, widely, like, considered a great novel, but it is nothing on Madame Bovary. Madame Bovary has been called the one of the greatest works of fiction of all time. It's also was called a perfect, like, a literally perfect work of fiction.
Hmm.
Proust, actually, I found a quote that he found it, he found it grammatically pure.
From a French person, that is the highest compliment ever.
Yeah. So anyway, after I read Sentimental Education, which I read when I was probably 19, 20, I thought it was a good book, but like didn't quite get all of the French jokes that I'm sure we would get if we read it now. I read Madame Bovary in English. I really enjoyed it, although it is an incredibly controversial book. So actually it was published in the Revue de Paris in 1856, and almost immediately public prosecutors put Flaubert on trial for obscenity. Yeah. So there was a trial in the sort of like the next year, 1857, and obviously it made the story notorious.
Right.
Flaubert was ultimately acquitted. And which meant that Madame Bovary became a bestseller.
Obviously, what a scandal.
Yeah. So some of the reasons for that, there are a lot. I mean, I won't pretend to understand 1850s morality. The book focuses essentially on a man and wife, and the wife, her like unhappiness in her life. So she has several affairs in the book, and all of them sort of ruin her life a little bit more every time. And because of her desires, she becomes like destitute almost, and she has to kill herself.
Oh, goodness.
Sorry, spoilers. Again, these are...
So trigger warning for anyone that doesn't want to read about suicide.
Yes, absolutely. But I think that there's a lot in that novel beyond the like obscene, obviously. But I'm sure at 1850, like, two affairs in a single book from a married woman based entirely on her desire for like fancy things and beautiful things might have been seen as obscene. So yeah, so that's how this like book is situated in the French context. Essentially, the character, there isn't really a main character, so to speak. I mean, the Madame Bovary is Emma. She's the wife of Charles Bovary, and he is sort of a lackluster man who just wants to marry someone who's beautiful and, you know, live a simple sort of life. And Emma does not want that. She wants a life of glitz and glamour, and she wants to experience the world in the way that she experiences it through books. She's also a big reader, and she loves plays and novels and musicals. And so she, for me, what the book is about is that she imagines her world to be better than what it is. And she's so disappointed with the monotony of real life. And it is depressing every time that, you know, she married a man who truly loves her, but he's just kind of boring and he's just not that interesting. And he tries to, you know, he tries to indulge her, but he's not as exciting as like a young, you know, law student. He's far more exciting, and he's not as like rich as a, you know, sort of pompous businessman. And each of those things in and of themselves then become not enough, right? And that they're not as good in reality as she imagines them to be. And she asks one of her lovers to, you know, run away with her and flee. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, this is just a thing, right? And she's devastated. But I think for me, the book is just about how you like imagine, you can imagine your world to be so much greater than it is. But the reality of life is like sort of, is all we have. And so she becomes so disconnected from reality and in a way that her choices keep getting more and more self-destructive.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't say that it's like a happy novel, but there's just a lot there that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Whether it's about like looking at our desires or the lack of choices that women actually had at the time, and that she's trying to follow any desire that the world will let her have. I mean, there's a lot. So yeah, it's an interesting book for sure.
No, that's really interesting to hear about female desire in that time period, because you're right, that's not something that is normally written about. So I can understand why it was so scandalous and such an uproar, especially with how she pursues desire. Yeah. Wow. You've kind of sold me on it. It's definitely a title I've heard forever, but yeah, I've never actually read it.
I mean, I will say the thing that you and I have both said, she's not a very likable character. I mean, she's not exactly the protagonist, because at first we follow Charles and then we meet her and it becomes really all about Madame Bovary. But she's not a likable person, but you sort of feel bad for her, and you're like enraptured in what she's going to do next and her next decision making, you know, failures. But yeah, it's really great. And actually a friend gifted me with the French copy right before I left France, which is very sweet. So I actually have a copy of Madame Bovary in French. I've never fully read it in French. I've read part of the book that was given to me. But the thing about Madame Bovary in English and in French is it's known to be essentially poetry. Like the prose is so beautiful that one of the comments that was made, I think, by Henry James was that, who's a prolific author at the time, said this is what poetry is supposed to do, but he does it in prose.
Wow.
So it's a beautifully written novel, but that also makes the French kind of hard sometimes.
Yeah, I can see that. So you would say French and English are both a go?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know, because sometimes it's, you know, like when you read Simone de Beauvoir's first translation into English, you were like, nope, it's time to get the updated one because it was so bad. So it's good to know that the translation's pretty good, that you get that poetic sense of the prose.
I mean, it has been translated, I think, 20 times since its original publication. So it is like, it is a very famous book, and therefore, like, there are a lot of translations. I highly recommend any of the last, like, sort of five. They're really well done and really wonderful. So yeah, that's what I'm bringing to the table in terms of a classic that I enjoyed, but is interesting for sure.
Well, there's definitely connections between all of these, because my next one, which is Le Père Goriot or Father Goriot by Balzac, also deals with morality. I think that's a big theme of any classic literature, is this societal dynamics, people's places in society, and basically like moral justice. So whether you get rewarded or punished. So it kind of ties together here. So basically, I set out a goal at the very beginning of this podcast, like to bring us all the way back to the intro episode for the Bookworms pod, back when we were just starting out. I'm pretty sure I mentioned that I had never read Balzac, and he's on my list, and that's one of the reasons I want to do this podcast. And then several years went by, because we are now going, we're going on a couple years of this podcast, and I finally did it, but it took multiple starts to get through, because man, this is a hunker of a book. And I think that's why so many people in France have been, one, impressed that I've read it, and two, asked me why, because this is a required reading for the baccalaureate. And most French students who are now adults that I've talked to had to suffer through it, is how they would phrase it. So I get it.
That's so interesting.
Yes, so it's often on the list.
Okay, so when you say it's a hunker of a book, do you mean page-wise or just like content?
It's a little over 300 pages, but it's content-wise. It's the small text. It's the long descriptions. It is very similar to Proust in the sense that the descriptions can go on for 10 plus pages.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, I'll get into a little bit more. So I obviously read this in French as I'm talking about Le Père Goriot. And I actually read the school edition from 2002-2003 school year. And the person who read this before clearly did not open the book very much, because this was pristine. I mean, the spine was intact, no annotation. I don't know how much this unnamed French student paid attention to this book. But anyways, I got to read it.
Yeah. Enough to pass.
Enough to pass. Yeah. So basically the quick summary of this book, to save you all the time, I don't know if you want to read it, but some people love Balzac. I'm already getting ahead of myself. You can kind of feel my overall, I don't know, takeaways. But the story takes place in Paris in the early 1800s, 1819 to be exact. It's largely based on the inhabitants of a boarding house on the Left Bank. So the Left Bank would be where the Latin Quarter is, Les Invalides, the Luxembourg Gardens, to help center everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit of a mixed bag. So half the characters, mostly the women, are of modest means or have been orphaned or widowed, you know, typical lot for women of the time. While the three men, surprise, surprise, have money and are intermingling with the Parisian society. So already a bit dated. So after the first 100 pages of the description of the house and characters, yes, you heard me correctly, the first 100 pages just describe the entryway, the facade, the staircase. I mean, it's a while. So get past those 100 pages. That's where the plot begins. And it's mostly about social climbing and falling, egos, pride, jealousy of all the different characters, greed and the need for money from all of these people. So those of modest means as well as the rich, because of course the rich never are rich enough to be with the more rich. So it's the never ending circle. And basically, I don't know. You get somewhat of like a detective feel of the novel, because you get pieces of information here and there about everyone and their happenings. And it kind of all makes sense at the end. Like, yes, you get resolution. But I just didn't care by the time I got there, because it just took so long to get there. And it was a bit of a tragic ending with moral justice served, right? So like the people that were the most greedy kind of have a social downfall and get left in ruins. The orphan gets saved. Right. You know, it's that kind of, you saw it coming.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a bad ending.
Like
you said,
sort of eternal justice, exactly. Right? Exactly. Like that each person reaps what they sow. And yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that was my summary. Here's my takeaway, if you haven't caught on, is that upon achieving my goal, I felt very accomplished. So yay for the bookworms.
Atta girl.
You know, got it done. And I actually walked myself down to Balzac's house, which is in the 16th arrondissement of Paris, took a picture in front of it, didn't go in because, you know, amazing. I don't got time for that. But, you know, it was on my way to work. So that was an exciting moment. But I definitely understand why the students don't like reading this for the back every year. I get that it's a hard read. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a super slow start. It's just pages and pages of details and settings. And it kind of get you off on the wrong foot. I did learn that the reason that this happens is because the story was published like 10 pages at a time in the newspaper, and Balzac got paid by the page. So of course he wanted to add as much as he could so that he got paid more.
Yes, that makes sense. There are certain modern authors that are like that, where you know that they are being paid by the page, and that's why their books are like nearly 1,000 pages.
I just don't think it's necessary. So the other issue with this, and I think you kind of touched on this with Proust, is that when you have these really long descriptions, especially when you're reading in French, you lose track of who's talking. So like by the time I got done with the angry monologue, I was like, who is this? And who's the he and she that they're referring to? So like you just get lost because it's 10 pages of someone just railing on somebody else. And of course, he had to use multiple names for the same character. So each character had like 3 or 4 different titles. So sometimes it was their title, sometimes it was their first name, sometimes it was their nickname, and it was so confusing. And then lastly, like I think it's like 350 pages, it was just very confusing overall. Not great in my book, like wasn't an enjoyable experience. I don't think reading in English would have made it better, because I think you would still have the same issues, right? Like it wasn't the French comprehension. It was, I didn't like the experience of this book. So it is Balzac after all. Some people love him. And I would probably say, let's leave him. You know, it's good. I read one.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, that's an accomplishment for sure. But you're also like not a fan of the like overly moralist kind of novel. Like we've read some just in our personal life that you are, if they're too preachy, you're not a fan.
I don't even think this was preachy. But you're right. In general, if it gets too moral, I'm not a huge fan. Like Jane Eyre was the perfect line. I really enjoyed that. It is preachy and moral in so many ways, but it didn't cross the line for me, whereas other books have, like Little Women. Not to...
Well, and I think, yes, I know.
Not to start a confrontation on this podcast.
agree to disagree. But I think that the thing that I love about Madame Bovary is I don't know that we have a... I have not done the research to back up this conversation. So just like, if I'm wrong, please tell me I'm wrong. I don't think Flaubert really tells us what his intention is about what he's trying to get across in Madame Bovary. And so I kind of like that... Yes, you can see that, you know, okay, these are the downfall. This is the downfall of, you know, pursuing affairs. And you could see it in this sort of moralistic way of like, you cheat on your husband with multiple people and you get yourself in debt. This is your comeuppance, lady. You're going to have to like kill yourself because you're in such ruin and you've ruined your good name, you know, and in society, that's all you have. I mean, you could see it that way, but I think you could also read it as like, this woman has nothing, you know, but her desires. She understandably like has read about all these incredible things. She wants to, it says she wanted to die, but she wanted to live in Paris as well. And so that's one of the lines that I love, where she just wants a glamorous life. And sometimes what you're like, what is pitched to you is just not the reality of life.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody feels that. And so in some ways, I don't know that it's saying like, oh, she's terrible because she cheated on her husband and that's why she has to, you know, have this ruinous end. I think part of it is just like, this is what happens when you pull yourself out of reality so much that you can't see what's really going on. You know, if you look at everything in rose-colored glasses, you don't see the reality. I think, I wonder what you feel about that with like, you know, living in Paris, right? Plus people, I'm sure, are like, oh my God, that's amazing. It's so wonderful. And like, it is wonderful. It is great. And you live in, you know, a closet, right? Like there's a reality to things that are not just like, it is the best thing in the world and everything in my life is glamorous. It's like, well, it is cool and there's cool things about it. And, you know, it's just life as well.
No, that's true.
I don't know.
I also think it's hard as modern readers to fully understand some of these dynamics, because I think that's another question, right? Like, should these books be passed down? And obviously the French education system has decided that yes, they should be. But it's hard because I think you get to a point where the 16-year-old of today, or, you know, I'm in my late 20s, isn't going to understand the social dynamics of the 1800s, oh, yes. Right? And so we can guess, is it moralistic? Is it just because they're making fun of the rich? But then who's reading it at the time? And is it because they don't even see themselves among the characters that the author thinks it's funny? And, you know, like, there yeah. can be so many different layers. And so I think it is hard, especially when the whole principle of a book is based on social mobility or climbing. Whereas at least in maybe Madame Bovary, yeah. from what you've been saying, you can read it in different ways, which might yeah. help modern readers enjoy it still. So I don't know. What do you think? Would you pass on Madame Bovary?
So I would, but I would in the same way that I think I like the way we're passing on Proust. I would in discussion. I love Madame Bovary, but I think it only grows when you talk to people about it. And I think that we felt the same for Proust, is that, like, yeah, okay, I'm getting something from it. But when we talk about it, it grows, you know, mm-hmm. and like I find myself actually liking Proust more after we've discussed it.
Yeah.
I sort of finish something and go, yeah, it was fine. And then when we get into it, it's more interesting.
I would say that for any book, honestly. I'm a huge book club fan
now. That's
fair. You know, like, it's amazing how even a fiction book, you're like, eh. And then we talk about it. I was like, wow, I did not see that. This book is fantastic. Like, I love discussion. It's really the way to go, guys.
Yeah, but I think that there's lots in Madame Bovary that is beyond just, like, some of this stuff is a little gross, right? Like, there's some of it that's just ugh. But I think a lot of it is still very, like, relevant. There's a lot of passages as well that, like Proust, just pulled out of the exact context, like, are so real. You know, she talks about, like, being sad with her life and hoping, you know, desperately. This is the quote that I read for the episode, is, like, hoping desperately that just something will happen to her. Mm. I mean, how many times have you been, like, a 14-year-old sitting looking at a window being like, oh, I wish something right. would happen to just disrupt this life. Give me something to do, you know? And I
think that's true at any age. How many people get stuck in their routines, you know? Yeah. COVID, how many people were staring out their windows dreaming of what could be?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's a exactly. check.
What about you for, so Balzac has been sort of decided. What about what about George Sand? Is that something that you would pass down?
I would be curious to read her other works. So this one was very provincial, mm-hmm. and I did enjoy getting some imagery from this time period in France, and especially outside of Paris, because I think so few books outside of Paris get passed down. And I know Zola does do that as well, and he's That's been true. On my list literally since the beginning as well, but Balzac wasn't a success, you know, so let me have a little bit before Zola, especially with our Proust reading. So I would give her another yes. chance. Like I said, I think the book is accessible and easy to read. It doesn't take long. So I do think it's a great thing to pass on for someone that says, hey, I want to read in French. I want to tackle one of these great authors. Anyone that has a decent level of French could get through it. So I think for that reason,
yeah,
it's good.
Okay.
You know, like, some people might not be disgusted by the mother to lover thing. You know, like, it didn't ruin the book, right? Like, it wasn't the same experience with Balzac.
And I mean, that is a trope that exists beyond just right. that novel, right? Like, it's not one that I enjoy either, but that's not something that's created, right? Like, that whole Oedipus thing is very real.
Very real. So, yeah. So, like, for that reason, why not pass it on? I don't think it was that problematic of a book. Balzac, I have to join the masses of other French friends of mine and say, yeah, no, not for me. But...
Boo.
Yeah. If you want to go for it, and I know some people love Balzac, so I think go for it if you want to feel that you have passed a test or have joined. You know, I think part of the reason I wanted to read it was as an outsider who didn't do the back. I wanted that experience of saying, well, yeah. I've read what's on the back, or I could do it, and feeling French through that experience, right? Like, I wanted to have the communal French experience. And so great, I did it. But no, I'm not going to hand it to my kid. Or if it's not on the list for the back when they go through the back. I'm not going to be like, you have to read this. Nah.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, this was amazing conversation. I feel like this was a great way of, like, especially because classics can be a little where you don't have quite as strong opinions. You're sort of like, I don't think it was written for me, right? Like, because it was written so long ago, it can feel dated. This is a great, like, little Coles Notes way of experiencing this. I really appreciate you reading Balzac, so I don't have to.
There you go. Well, happy Halloween, bookworms. We hope that you have a wonderful day, and we'll catch you next time. A bientôt.